But Dhananjaya Prabhu's got a lot of history with Krishna consciousness and Srila Prabhupada. So we're very honored to have his association here, and we hope that all the Prabhus can take advantage of it. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much for allowing me to come to this wonderful temple and get the opportunity to say a few words about our beloved Srila Prabhupada. As we all know, there is the book Bhagavat, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and there's person Bhagavat. And as Srila Prabhupada himself mentioned in the 60s, actually in 66, he said that my responsibility is I am the Supreme Personality of Servitor Godhead. Which meant that Prabhupada was fully surrendered to spreading Krishna's name, fame around the world. And he dedicated his last few years in the pursuit of establishing our International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And Prabhupada established 120 temples while he was on this planet. One of those temples was the temple in London, Bury Place. And I had the good fortune to join ISKCON in London in 1969, just before the beautiful deities of Sri Sri Radha Landanishwara were personally installed by Srila Prabhupada. That was on the 14th of December, 1969. Another amazing incident that happened a few years later on in 1972-73 was the appearance of Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda. And I'd like to share with you how Radha Gokulananda came to London. Of course, Radha Gokulananda are the presiding deities at Bhaktivedanta Manor, just outside of London. So in 1972, I happened to be serving in Bury Place, and Prabhupada came. It was in springtime, and he had just left Nairobi in East Africa, in Kenya. And then he came to the British climate. The Nairobi climate is semi-tropical, and the British climate is far from being tropical, I can assure you. And so because of that, Prabhupada was not feeling so well. In fact, he acquired a fever. And to subdue that fever, he asked Malati to prepare some green chili pakoras. How many of you have experienced the taste of green chili pakoras? Not so many. Did you find them hot? In fact, Malati asked Srila Prabhupada, because this is not really part of Prabhupada's diet, was eating green chili pakoras. He said that by eating 6 green chili pakoras, that is the equivalent of drinking 1 bottle of gin. You know what gin is? Something that we don't drink. You might have heard of it. Because Prabhupada was a pharmacist, so he knew that different herbs, different vegetables, had different influences on the body. And in 1972, I was in the habit of eating a lot of Prabhupada's maha, which we call maha maha. That started because in 1969 when I joined and we were staying out at John Lennon's estate, I got the amazing opportunity to massage Srila Prabhupada, even before I was initiated. And Jamuna, who was cooking for Prabhupada at that time, she told me, said that every devotee that gets a chance to massage Srila Prabhupada gets to eat all of his remnants, and you don't need to share them with anybody. That was like a big deal. So that was something I really looked forward to. So I was still kind of in that frame of mind that, all right, Prabhupada's plate is going to come down, and it would go down into the basement. In Bury Place, there's five different floors, including a basement. And I purposely put out the lights in the basement just after Malati had brought down Prabhupada's remnants and put them on a shelf, because I didn't want anybody else to know where Prabhupada's remnants were. I wanted them all for myself. So in the darkness, I started stuffing my face with chapati and sabji and these green chili pakoras. And all of a sudden, this incredibly burning sensation around my mouth, my tongue, my lips were so intense, I started running around in circles. I couldn't do anything else. And I thought, well, that's one thing I'm not going to do again, and that is eat maha maha in the darkness. You should always bring a torch, which you call a flashlight. Also, Prabhupada, I don't know why he did this, because he could have asked anybody at the temple. He said, I want you to go out and purchase some snuff. You know what is snuff? Snuff is made from tobacco, basically. And so he described to me the container. He knew the name of the company, Smiths of Birmingham. And I said, Prabhupada, where could I find snuff? He said, you go to a high-class tobacconist. They will have it. I went, what? And I said, why do you need to do this to take tobacco? And he said, this will stabilize my blood pressure. Because everything's got a use. Just like now, of course, marijuana is practically legal to take. And it's a herb. It's a very common herb. You see them, marijuana plants growing everywhere in India. Maybe not so much in California, but they hide them. But I think they're coming out of the woodwork now. They're kind of becoming more mainstream. Anyway, I was given this challenge because I'd never had snuff myself. And here Prabhupada was saying, and he said also, this type of snuff contains different oils, like eucalyptus, menthol. And so that was a challenge. I went out. I went to a high-class tobacconist just off Cambridge Circus in central London and brought it to Prabhupada. And he looked at it. It was in a cellophane package in an aluminium little tin. And he said, yes, this is what I wanted. But unfortunately, half the temple, especially the men, came to know that Prabhupada was taking snuff. So what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to follow the footsteps of the pure devotee, right? So because Prabhupada is taking snuff, I can take snuff. And so this became a habit amongst certain senior devotees. And Prabhupada was giving a class before Radha Landanishwara, and he noticed in the back there was these devotees that were sneezing and blowing their noses and everything, and he said, what you're doing? And they were kind of ashamed because they were taking snuff in class. And Prabhupada said, you cannot imitate. Immediately stop this nonsense. Just to warn you, don't try it at home. Anyway, Prabhupada got better. He was much, you know, his consciousness was, because of this fever, actually, I forgot to mention, that in the middle of the night, he called out for Shyamasundar. He was feeling so bad. And when Shyamasundar came to his room, Prabhupada practically fell into his arms. He was that sick. But the green chili pakoras worked. So then, of course, Prabhupada was very conscious of his mission. So he said, he called me, he said, you know, there's a set of Radha Krishna deities. They're in this big godown, this big warehouse in Delhi. There were the Delhi Pandal deities. And that Delhi Pandal was very successful. And there was a devotee called Tejas who had acquired the deities from Jaipur. And Prabhupada wanted the focus of attention of the Pandal, because they had a Pandal program in Connaught Place, right in the center of Delhi. And tens of thousands of people were coming every day. The Mandal, this program lasted for over 7 days. And Jamuna was taking care of those deities. She was dressing them, she was offering them fresh garlands. All the boga that was being cooked at the Pandal site was offered to those deities. So she was practically treating them like, you know, installed deities, but they were never installed. So after that very successful Pandal program, and the chief guest of honor was the High Commissioner from Canada. And the interesting thing is that one of the High Commissioner's guests was a personal friend of my mother-in-law, Balagopal's mother. And she never forgot for a moment, she's from California, from Tarzana, and she never forgot her experience with meeting Srila Prabhupada, along with the High Commissioner of Canada, at that event. So after the event was over, the deities were placed in a box, two boxes obviously, and stored in this warehouse. So then Prabhupada, when he came to London, he was thinking about those deities. And he said, you know, there's a very beautiful set of Radha Krishna deities lying in this warehouse in Delhi. And I want them to come to London. Is that okay? Is this a good idea? He was asking me if it was a good idea to bring those deities from Delhi. I said, of course, Prabhupada. He said, so if you want them to come, you please make arrangements. Now, there was this Gujarati moneylender called Dr. Shah, and he was in the habit of offering very nice gifts to Radha Landanishwar. Of course, you know, in our temple at that time, because the very place was so narrow, the deity room was so narrow, that on the altar, first of all, on the first step were Sri Sri Gornitai. Then on the top of this big slab of marble that George Harrison donated, he paid for it, there was Radha Landanishwara. And above Radha Landanishwara, on a platform above Radha Landanishwara, were the Jagannath deities, Jagannath Subhadra Baladev, same size as our deities here. Because Shyamasundar, he made three sets, identical sets of Jagannath deities. One set is here, one went to San Francisco and of course moved to Berkeley, and the other set came to London. So it's quite an unusual arrangement to have deities upon deities, if you know what I mean. And I was thinking, and I didn't say this out loud, but I was wondering, why does Prabhupada want us to have another set of Radha Krishna deities? We already have a beautiful set. Radha Landanishwar installed in 1969. Anyway, he wanted this done, so I tried to follow his instruction to the letter. And so the next time that Dr. Shah came, I said, you know, Dr. Shah, Srila Prabhupada, he's wanting a set of Radha Krishna deities to come to London. Would you like to help pay for them to come here? And Prabhupada had asked me, he said, what is the best way for these deities to come? by ship or by air. And Dr. Shah actually recommended, he said, that they should come by air, not by ship. And he paid for them. He paid out of his pocket. He took, within a day or two, £500, which covered the cost of shipping them by air. And a few weeks before that, he had come with a beautiful set of 24-karat gold jewelry for Radha Landanishwara. Crowns, necklaces, bangles, nose ring, rings. And when I told this to Srila Prabhupada about Dr. Shah, that he had just donated a beautiful set of 24-karat gold, which means it's the highest quality, the purest gold, he said, "How do you know it's real?" Prabhupada is very practical like that. He said, "How do you know it's real? Just because he told you, you're accepting what he's telling you, this is real?" He said, "Immediately get them tested." So I took them to Putney Jewelers in Bishopsgate in the city of London. Lo and behold, they were all 24-karat gold. So when I reported this to Srila Prabhupada, he said, "Immediately go out and buy a safe." He said, "This will attract thieves. So we cannot have these pieces of jewelry stolen." So that was the very first safe that we bought. I bought a second-hand one. Being Scottish, obviously, I wanted to get a good deal. And I can still remember, even today, that safe is still being used. Not in Bury Place, but up in Bhaktivedanta Manor, in the treasurer's office. It cost £75. So Dr. Shah had proven that, you know, he was, you know, very keen to help us. So when Gurudas, who was in Delhi at the time, heard that I had contacted this forwarding agent to send these deities to London, he said, no, you shouldn't do this. This is wrong. Of course, the instruction had come from Prabhupada, so how can that be wrong? It can be wrong. It's right. And so Gurudas then had sent a telex, because in those days we didn't have email, obviously. He sent a telex to Prabhupada saying, "We want these deities not to come at this moment. We're not ready for them." But then a few days later, the forwarding agent said, "We've already transferred these deities on the plane and they're coming within a couple of weeks." Then Prabhupada heard, "So the deities are coming? Instead of Krishna wants to come, who can stop him?" So they came. And they came in two wooden crates. When we got the information from the customs at the airport, we went out to this warehouse, and this customs officer accompanied us with a huge wrench, because he saw on the bill of lading that there were two marble statues, and he wanted to make sure that we weren't shipping something else besides deities. So he opened up the two crates, and out popped a couple of quite large chicharacha. Is that the Spanish name? Cockroaches. Cucaracha. It's the first time I saw, you know, they were like flying dates. We used to call them flying dates. Cucaracha. And this customs guy saw them jump out and immediately crushed them beneath his feet, beneath his big shoes. But they got the opportunity to associate with Radha Krishna, at least for a few hours. Who knows what they ended up, or how they ended up. So then they came, and then it was just, then it kind of dawned to me, there was four of us. There was Sudarjaya, a French devotee, Balagopal, Lila Shakti, a Swedish pujari, and myself. So the four of us went out to the airport, got the deities, loaded them on the, and of course the customs officer said, "All right, you can take them. I'm happy that the contents are exactly what it says in the bill of lading." And on the way back into central London, I kept thinking, where are we going to put these deities? So when we got to the front door, I thought that the safest place is the Tulsi room, which is like on the third floor. And that's where they stayed. And it's quite unique because generally speaking, and Prabhupada even made this comment too, he said when we are opening temples, generally speaking, what comes first is the building or the temple, then the deities. But he said in this case the deities came before the building. We didn't have another building. But that was another, you can say, impetus for us to find a bigger place to house those deities. And so when we actually got Bhaktivedanta Manor, Prabhupada asked me, he said, do we still have those deities? Because it was a year later. He said, do we still have those deities? I said, yes, Prabhupada, they're in very place in the deity room, sewing room. He said, all right, we'll install them there. And because Prabhupada liked the village situation there, it's 17 miles outside of London, it's in the countryside, he said we should call this area New Gokula. And the deity should be named Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda. So that's how they came. And they were installed on Janmashtami, 1973. And Balagopal and Malati dressed the deities for the very first time in the presence of Srila Prabhupada. And that's that famous film that you might have seen, where we're all, you know, ushered by Prabhupada to come into the deity room and circumambulate the altar, which is also quite a rare thing. That didn't happen very often. And so Prabhupada was very happy that they had been installed there. And just to let you know, we're expanding our facility at the manor. We got permission from the local council to construct two halls, a total of 18,000 square feet. Now the manor is about 10,000 square feet, so it's almost double the size of the manor. But these are separate buildings. We use one building for class, for kirtan, for festivals, and the other one for weddings and for dramas. And we need that space. You might have heard some rumors that there's quite a few people show up at the manor for special days like Janmashtami. They're true. On average, 85,000 people show up for Janmashtami. 85,000. Of course, that's nothing compared to what happens in Mumbai at Radharasa Bihari Temple. They get 400,000 people when it's quiet. So it's amazing, you know, Prabhupada planted so many seeds of Krishna consciousness around the world. But he also never lost his personal touch with all of us. I'll just tell you a little story about when Prabhupada was translating the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam in Vrindavan. He would stay up all night. He would take rest for a couple of hours only, because he was also concerned that he wanted as much of the Bhagavatam to be translated in his presence. So he called me one day and he said, I want you to go to Delhi to get some Ayurvedic medicine. It's called Yogendra Ras. And he said that there is a company in Delhi called Sadhana Aushadhalaya. And if you go there, they will have it. And, you know, he said in Chandni Chowk, which is the old part of Delhi, near Red Fort, he said they have a shop in Chandni Chowk. I mean, that was all I was told. Again, it was like a challenge. Let's see if I can find this place, because Chandni Chowk isn't just a small little street. You know, it's bustling all the time with millions of people, and you know, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack. In fact, it was just like that, because when I finally got where the shop was, the sign had fallen down the building was actually kind of collapsing because there had never been any repairs done to the building. I could just barely make out the name, Sadhana Aushadhalaya. And so I went in there, and there was nobody there. I thought, this is weird. How can they do any business if there's nobody here? And I called out. I said, Hare Krishna. Koi aadmi hai? Kaha? Which means, you know, is anybody here? Where are you? So then somebody was sleeping on the back of the counter, you know, because there's like space there. And they kind of woke up. And I said, do you speak English? He said, Tora, Tora. Kya chahiye? What do you need? I said, Yogendra Ras. Yogendra Ras hai? Aapke paas? Do you have any of this? He said, oh, gee. So then he took out some glass bottles with cork stoppers sealed with, you know, this wax, sealing wax. And it was in Bengali and English. Apparently, Sadhana Aushadhalaya, not only are they in Delhi, they're also in Dhaka, which is the capital of Bangladesh, and Calcutta. And that's, of course, where Prabhupada knew this. He had done business with them before, obviously. Otherwise, he would never have known that company existed. And it was practically not existing because there was no care being taken for their presentation, for their shop. There was nothing in the windows. It was just all empty. And anyway, so they had this Yogendra Ras. And I said, you know, what is Yogendra Ras exactly? Purified mercuric oxide. I went, what? Purified mercuric oxide? I said, yes. He said, this prevents brain fag. F-A-G, brain fag. You know what I mean by that? That it, you know, this is why Prabhupada was asking for it, because he was finding it difficult to keep his concentration when he was translating, so he wanted a clear mind. So I brought this back down to Vrindavan, went to Prabhupada's house, paid my obeisances, and offered these little bottles of Yogendra Ras. And Prabhupada looked with his glasses, then he broke the seal. He had a mortar and pestle, and he immediately started grinding up the little brown balls inside the bottle. And he took it with a little honey. He said, yes, this is what I wanted. So Prabhupada gave us challenges, but he also gave us the opportunity to serve him. Now I'll tell you a little story about how to get on the other side of Srila Prabhupada. Not the loving, well, you know, offering prasadam and service, but the other side where you do something which doesn't please Srila Prabhupada. I fit into that category very easily. So at the Krishna Balaram Mandir, for those of you who have been there, there's the front entrance. There's a little sort of covered, don't know what you would call it. Cupola? Is that the proper name? Okay. So there's this little cupola above the front entrance. And we had a bell that was rung during the aarti, and that bell was on the Darshan Mandap, just in front of Krishna Balaram. Just a few feet away from their altar. But because the guests and devotees would ring this bell vigorously, it broke. Not the rope, but the actual fixing where the bell was kept. The bell fell and cracked. And you can still see that indentation in the marble where it fell, even today. So I thought, okay, now here's an opportunity to do something better, I thought. I'll get a bigger bell, and we'll hang it above the door, the front entrance. So I was so proud of this bell, because I'd done like a special deal, and it cost like 3,000 rupees in Loy Bazaar. from the pitol wala, the brass wala. And it was a big bell. It weighed about maybe 30 kilos. And so I said, Prabhupada, I paid my obeisances. I said, Prabhupada, when the bell arrived at the temple, I want to show you something. And Prabhupada said, yes, what is that? I said, well, I've just purchased a bell for the temple. He said, oh, let me see. So, you know, and with bells that are made in India, there's always like a ring on the top. So then I got a bamboo pole, and there was two workers brought the bell on this bamboo pole. And Prabhupada said, let me hear it. Now I'm going to hear what it sounds like. So we rang it, and he said, yes, this is a nice sound. He said, hang it in the tree. For those of you who know, in the courtyard, there's a tree. There's a tamal tree. And I was really surprised. I said, Prabhupada, I don't think this is going to work. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, if you put the bell on that tree, because the bell is so heavy, it'll break the branches. He says, no, just hang it in the tree. I said, Prabhupada, I really don't believe that's the right place to put the bell. He said, you can put that bell any damn place you want. I want it hung on the tree. I didn't hang it on the tree. I had it installed above the front door. So then I got this rope, and it was nylon, plastic rope, you know, really cheapo green Indian rope. And I had engaged one of the chokidars, one of the guards, to ring the bell. So then Prabhupada saw it, because, you know, we went on morning walks. Every single morning we went up Chatikara Road and came back down, and you know, Prabhupada would time it so that it was at 7 o'clock and it boom, boom, you know, this sound. So then Prabhupada said, I've been thinking about the use of this bell. He said, this bell should not only be rung during the aartis, but it should be rung on the hour, every hour, night and day. He said, all the people living in this part of Ramanreti are very poor. They don't own watches. They're always asking, time, time, time. Have you ever had that experience? Time. they wouldn't, you know, finger their watch. They didn't have a watch. They just, you know, give us the impression that this is what they want us to know. They want us to tell them the real time. So he said, you'll be helping all the local villagers. They will know the time because the bell will be rung on the hour, every hour. And then he said, and if the bell is not rung by the chokidar, you have to ring the bell. Anyway, now here's the embarrassing part. When we were coming down from Chatikara, it was exactly 7 o'clock. The guard was there with a rope. Boom, boom, nothing. Because what had happened was, because it was cheap nylon rope, because it's very skinny, and it's a very sharp edge at that area, and the rope was rubbing up against that edge, it broke. So then Prabhupada looks at me, and he said, no brain, simply buffalo stool. And this is in front of a lot of senior devotees. It's not just me and Prabhupada on this walk. There's like 30 of us. Tamal Krishna, Brahmananda, and, you know, so many names. I just don't want to name them all. Okay, I had to swallow my pride. And then we worked it out that if we buy really thick rope, it won't break so quickly. But when I was sleeping, in those days, Brahmananda was Prabhupada's secretary. And I was staying in one of the small rooms inside the guest house. These were like a brahmachari ashram area. And I was sharing the room with Upendra, and Prabhupada was, you know, his his meals were being made by Upendra and Palika, and he was giving him massage. He's a really nice devotee. And it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and Brahmananda, he's got this heavy, weighty way of banging on doors. It's like, what came to mind was like these cartoons, you know, how the door bends when someone hits it. And that's what it felt like, because I was just waking up from some dream state. And there was Brahmananda saying, Prabhupada wants to see you. I said, do I have time to put on a dhoti? No, come in your gamcha. I thought, what's happened? He'll tell you. God, I thought, what on earth has happened here? Anyway, I put on my gamcha, ran down the stairs behind Brahmananda, went up the stairs in Prabhupada's house, and there was Prabhupada with the light on, translating. And he looks up at me, I pay my obeisances, he says, you have not heard? I went, oh no, what haven't I heard? Because, you know, we had a guest house with 65 rooms, and there was a temple and so many different things. And he said, the bell did not ring. Go and ring the bell. He kept his promise. He said, you know, if you don't ring, if the chokidar doesn't do it, you have to do it. So the lesson to be learned is you don't somehow or another get on the wrong side of Srila Prabhupada. But at the same time, it was kind of a very special experience to be chastised. Just like, you know, we always say about Prabhupada, he's as soft as a rose and as hard as lightning, right? So I witnessed that. I witnessed both ends, both sides. Maybe now we can stop a little bit and ask for questions, or do you want to hear a few more stories, or are you finding this very boring? Continue. That's a big question. When we got the manor, Shamsundar was a GBC. I'm calling names, I'm saying names because it's good that everybody knows the characters that were around at that time. This is 1973. And Shamsundar had this dream that he was going to find rubies, gem quality rubies. He thought this is a way to get lots of money for ISKCON and use satellites to broadcast Krishna's name and all kinds of stuff like that. Trouble was, he didn't have anything of any quality. It was known as corundum, and corundum is what rubies come from. But corundum in the 60s was very popular with people who kept fish tanks, because they'd put the corundum in the bottom of their fish tanks because it looks nice in water. In other words, it's practically worthless. And Shamsundar was just absorbed in going through all these different 10 kilo bags of corundum looking for gem quality rubies, which he never found. And I was very honest with Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, where's Shamsundar? I said, well, he's in his room and he's going through his rubies. And Prabhupada said, how much money has been made so far? I said, well, he did bring back a couple of small pieces of emerald and some other semi-precious stones. I said, he sold £500 in the last 3 months. Then he looked at me, he said, I think in your country, garbage disposal men get more money. That's the words he used. He wasn't too impressed with the £500 over 4 months or whatever. Anyway, so he said, has he chosen a temple president? Because we're there for a few weeks. I said, no, Prabhupada. He said, okay, I'm appointing you as a temple president, pointing to me. And I said, what should I do? He said, you should go down. This is up in Prabhupada's room at the manor. He said, you go downstairs and you tell everybody, I've just appointed you as a temple president. And I thought, oh boy, I'm going to be in big trouble now. Because I knew, because Shamsundar didn't want me to be anywhere near that position. because I was telling Prabhupada the truth. Does that sound familiar, telling the truth? Anyway, so I went downstairs and I said, I'd just like to announce Prabhupada's made me the temple president of the manor. Someone ran over to where Shamsunda was staying. Shamsunda came over, immediately ran upstairs and started blasting Prabhupada, saying, Prabhupada, I'm the GBC man here. I make these decisions. You don't make these decisions. And Prabhupada said, all right. And he called me up, and Prabhupada's face was black. And I said, and he said, what can I do? Either he's GBC or businessman. Now he wants to be GBC. Sometimes he wants to be businessman. What can I do? I said, Prabhupada, with your permission, because we had a plan B, my wife and I, if this was going to happen, we knew it was going to happen. We would like to start a temple in Rome, with your blessings and permission. And his demeanor immediately changed. He said, yes, you go to Rome, you find a house, you write to me, and I'll come and stay with you. Just like that. I mean, I don't speak a word of Italian. I mean, I know spaghetti and macaroni and ciao. That's about it. So you can say we're kind of living proof about the blind man can see and the lame man can climb over mountains, that kind of stuff. Anyway, he gave us his blessings. So we went to Rome, not knowing anybody there. And within a few months, we had a house that we converted into a temple. We installed Gornitai there with a beautiful onyx marble altar. And we immediately invited Prabhupada. And he came. And he stayed with us for 9 days. In those 9 days, I tried to get an audience with the Pope. He was Pope Paul VI, but he was very sick. I had a very good connection with the Vatican. There's this Monsignor Rossano, and he helped in so many different ways. And he said, I really apologize. His Holiness can't see anybody at the moment. But there's one cardinal who wants to meet your leader. His name is Cardinal Pignedoli. He was the Bishop of Bombay. So he wants to meet you and your Swami in the Office of the Non-Christian Religions. They have such a place. Office of the Non-Christian Religions on Trastevere. So that's where Prabhupada met the Cardinal. And it was a very, very wonderful meeting because the Cardinal just agreed with everything Prabhupada said. And Prabhupada was so impressed with him and not putting up any resistance, he handed him a signed copy of his Bhagavad Gita. Yes. Yogeshwar was there. Apparently he recorded. I didn't record it. But. And we never had any trouble from the Roman Catholic Church or the Vatican. They completely accepted us. Which was a big plus for it. Because, I was going through the process of legalizing Harinam and magazine distribution and book distribution and so many things. We actually published a little Italian magazine called Ritorno a Dio, which means back to Godhead, basically. And we sent that copy to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada wrote back and he said that receiving this magazine is more dear than anything to be experienced within the three worlds. Yes. Well, I actually went into Italy with Somaka. Somaka joined in Paris, but he had a Volkswagen van. I had come here, worked for my father-in-law, painted the house. He gave me $1,000. Karandar saw me. He was the GBC at the time. And he said, hey, Dhananjay, what are you doing in Los Angeles? I said, well, I'm trying to raise funds to start a temple in Rome. He said, come with me. We drove to some bank in Beverly Hills. He said, wait here in the car. He went inside, came out with an envelope, gave it to me, and he donated $2,000 for the project of opening a temple in Rome. So there was Somaka, there was Ali Krishna. Ali Krishna, of course, is the wife of Madhusevita. if you know your GPC man, he's one of them. And who was the first person that joined? Chitra Rupini? He wasn't, I don't think he ever got initiated, though, did he? Yeah, we had, in those days, we had this, some devotees wouldn't touch the toilet, they wouldn't touch the toilet. They would kind of sit on top, if you know what I mean. Not the Indian style, but this is just the Western style. And the whole toilet broke. And he got a huge gash on his behind. But what was his name? I think his name was Basil. Was it Basil or? But there was, I'll tell you the name I remember, is Yavanaha. I think Yavanaha was the very first one. And he spoke English as well. We made about 25 devotees in the first 6 months of being there. Very auspicious. In fact, we organized a Prabhupada conference in the hotel park of the Principe. There was seating for 500. We did Harinam, we handed out flyers, we put up posters for Prabhupada's public program in the hotel. It's a 5-star hotel in Villa Borghese. And I kept thinking, my goodness, oh, I've not made a mistake, because you know what it's like if you hire a big hall and only 3 people show up? On this occasion, although there was seating for 500, we counted. 800 came. Over 800 people came. And Prabhupada turned to me, because I was holding up the umbrella above Prabhupada's Vyasasan. He said, the Italians, they're naturally God conscious. They want to know. They want to know. They want the blessings of God, just like the Pope always, on a Sunday, gives these blessings. He said, but they have to be taught how to actually receive those blessings. How to be, what's the word? Worthy. Yeah, that's what he said. He said, for them to be worthy, they have to learn how to be worthy for the blessings of God. So that's what happened. There is a temple which is like an underground temple. It's an underground area. It's not very... We went to see that. It's very dark. But there is another place called Biblioté, which is above ground, and that's where they have regular meetings and prasadam. But the two big temples, of course, or you can say the 3 big temples, are Prabhupada Desh in Vicenza, Albertoni, and then you got Bergamo, Bellagio Hare Krishna. And then you've got in Florence, and outside of Florence, that's Villa Vrindavan. So Villa Vrindavan, Prabhupada Desh, and Villaggio Hare Krishna are the 3 big temples with lots of devotees and lots of activities going on. Not so much in Rome, although Rome is the most important city in Italy. It hasn't happened there yet. But I think it's only time that's separating something happening. Yeah, it's true. I mean, does everybody else want to know that? Is it something that Prabhupada also, of course, didn't do very often? Is, you can say more or less bequeath a property for us to live in. For a householder in Vrindavan. This is in 1976, and at that time I was living in the guest house. I was sharing a room with Gopal Krishna, the GPC. My wife was in a single room, sharing it with an Indian devotee and her little daughter, Brijlata. And so the Prabhupada called me and said, where are you staying? And I told him, in the guest house. He said, oh, I never expected my householders to live in the temple. He said, the temple is meant for brahmacharis and sannyasis, and householders are meant to live outside. He said, I'm giving you this property, not very far from here. It was about half a mile, but it seemed like a lot longer, obviously, in those days. And that was Taparia House. And there was this Indian businessman from Bombay called Ganjam Das Taparia. I just donated this house on a piece of land to Prabhupada. He said, so I want you to live there, and I want you to do business there. So, and he asked me, he said, so will you go over and look at it? I said, yes, Prabhupada. I went over there. We both went over there. And we were kind of shocked because it was like there was no wall, there was no real protection. There was a well. There was no running water. It was just a bucket and a rope. No bathroom. We had to go to the field, you know, the stool fields with everybody else. So I came back and I was describing it to Prabhupada. And I said, I don't know if we will survive. It seems very dangerous. He said, no. He said, you just hire a chowkidar, a guard, with a big stick, and he'll stay up all night, and he'll whack the stick on the ground, and he'll keep calling out, Radhe, Radhe, and you'll be okay. So we found a chowkidar with a big stick, and we paid him 90 rupees a month. That's 3 rupees a day. And he looked after us. And actually, we never had any difficulty. We were never attacked, never bothered by the local gundas. Quite amazing. And Prabhupada wanted us to build the wall, you know, I'm not getting political here, but there was a wall that was built to keep out, especially the monkeys. There's so many monkeys in Vrindavan. And he appointed a local businessman who had retired in Vrindavan called Vishwambar Dayal Agarwal to help supervise the construction work of anything that was going on there. He said, I don't want you to be cheated, and he will make sure that you're not cheated. And he was a very close friend of Srila Prabhupada. We used to call him Bhagaji. And so, you know, he was so helpful. And that's where we stayed. And we used to call it Tapasya House. Not Taparia House, Tapasya House. Because it was real Tapasya. No AC. You can, you know, think way back. This is 1976. Not even that. Sometimes we had it's known as load shedding. When the electricity goes off, it's load shedding. It means all the factories get electricity, but not the homes. It was austere. It's definitely a Tapasya House. But, you know, it was Prabhupada's mercy. That was our house in Vrindavan, given to us by Prabhupada. And that became the Goshala. We bought the first cow and calf from the Govardhan cow market. We called the cow Bridge Rani. And the little baby calf was... what was the name? Do you remember the name of the calf? The name of the calf? Kalindi. Kalindi. Yeah, that's what it was. There was Bridge Rani and Kalindi. And she was a Haryana white cow. She gave 5 kilos of milk in the morning and 5 kilos of milk in the evening. So it was a very, very special place. And just see how merciful Srila Prabhupada was. So caring. Because he didn't want us to leave Vrindavan. He wanted us to stay. So he used every opportunity to make sure we wouldn't be attracted to going outside. Because his last request, he said, so I want you and your family to remain in Vrindavan for the rest of your lives and become bridge basis. At least our daughter's born in Vrindavan, so she's a Brijbasi by birth. So we have to fulfill that request eventually. I think now it's breakfast, isn't it? Thank you so much for your attention. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you.